Welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I am your host, Jimmy Trainor. Thanks so much for joining me. This week's episode of the SI Media Podcast will feature an interview with Scott Van Pelt, who is a friend of the show. Appreciated him coming on. We discussed the Sports Center after the NBA Finals and what went into putting those together. If you watch them, you know Scott did a great job. And they were kind of, we use the phrase controlled chaos during the interview. It was fascinating to watch him handle it. And we got into some other stuff about doing SportsCenter, how he puts it together, the rush of doing a daily live show, whether he'd ever have LeVar Ball on his show, how he started this whole thing about tweeting pictures of people who look like him. And we also got into a few other things with Scott. So that comes up momentarily. I have to do the plugs here and remind you that you should subscribe to the SI Media Podcast. You should rate it. You should review it. Last week, we had Greg Wyshynski on from ESPN as well. And he talked about covering hockey and getting and going from sort of the blogs to the mainstream ESPN job he has now. So that was a good chat. So if you didn't listen to that, check it out. I hate to plug upcoming podcasts, but I'm going to do that next week. We're expected to have WWE champion Seth Rollins on this podcast. There'll be another guest as well, but I don't want to say that one yet. So subscribe. And now we go to ESPN Scott Van Pelt. All right, joining me now, always a good time when he's on, always a good conversation, ESPN SportsCenter host Scott Van Pelt. Scott, how are you?
I'm well, Jimmy. How are you?
I'm well, too. Thanks for coming on. Fresh off a big run for you at the NBA Finals there, airing on ABC, and then everyone flipping over to watch you on ESPN. I know the ratings for your edition of SportsCenter have been doing very well, so congratulations on that.
Yeah, well, thank you. The thing that we're pleased by is the understanding people have of sort of the clickover. I mean, when we follow Monday Night Football, and we get a big number, we're handed a gigantic rating.
Right.
Anyone in that slot is going to get a good number. They're following Monday Night Football. But despite the fact that Mike Breen is, you know, constantly promoting that you need to click over to watch ESPN for the post game, you still have to click over to ESPN to watch the post game. And as you and I know, people, maybe even us, are kind of lazy when it comes to that. So the fact that people would actually click over and the ratings did as well as they did during the finals is we'd like to hope a testament to our approach, and that we're, you know, I mean, it sounds like such garbage TV speak, but you're just trying to serve the audience that has an appetite for that, right? They want post game final stuff, and we're there to do it the way we do it. And you know, we're pleased that it went well on the rating front.
One of the reasons I wanted to have you on is because I watched a lot of those sports centers after the finals, and I was amazed at the what's the word I'm looking for? It was frantic but calm, and there were a lot of moving parts. It seemed like, as a viewer, as someone who's, you know, I'm watching it from the sports media angle more than almost the content angle. But I mean, you're recapping the game. You're going to a reporter who's at the arena, maybe Doris. Then you're going to, you know, Brian Windhorst, and it seems almost like controlled chaos. Is that what it's like for you?
Entirely. The beauty of the show is that you don't have an idea of how it's going to go. Yeah, I mean, I guess I'd put it this way. It's like, you ever seen that TV show Chopped? You know, like you get a basket and there's a bunch of ingredients. It's a fact, by the way, it's a perfect television show in terms of it. If you see the appetizer basket, I've said this a million times, you're going to see him make dessert, because it's like, well, what are they supposed to make out of, you know, a piece of bacon, a lifesaver, and a hobo's thumb, right? Like, we're going to make a bouillabaisse out of that. I don't really understand it.
Right.
What I'm saying here is, in our basket at the start of the show, I know we're probably going to have some combination of our group of people, Windhorst, Nichols, Stephen A. And then during the game, we've made requests for, if the Warriors win, Steph Curry, Draymond Green, whomever. And then you find out as you're on the air who you're getting and when you're getting them. But you don't have a rundown of when it's happening. So many times I'm finding out in my ear as I'm talking to Tim Legler, who, by the way, is phenomenal, so good at breaking things down and making the viewer smarter. While we're talking to legs, they may say, okay, Curry's sitting down right now. All right, hold on, we got to go to Kerr. Bob Myers is crying. I mean, like, you don't know. And as an anchor, that can be really scary if you let it. And it can be really just, it's fine if you just tell your viewers, like, hey, look, we're going to talk to these people at some point. We're not sure when. It's fine to talk on the, I'll talk to my producer on the air. Like, is so-and-so ready? All right, well, he's not. Hold on a second. The idea that you're supposed to be presenting this very calm sort of front to the viewer is unnecessary. Our viewers know that I'm an idiot. I'm just going to try my best and, you know, try to get us from A to B. But I just think when you're honest with them, look, we're not really sure when we're getting them, but we think we're going to. And then it's just kind of, I don't know, it gets, you get to 1 o'clock in the morning somehow. And it's fun. It's really a fun show to do in spite of the fact that the plan is really no plan.
Right. Well, that's what I was wondering about, how fun it is, because it was game five, I guess, where that was the Durant injury. So that episode, that show I remember watching, and I was thinking to myself, wow, because you had, like you said, Bob Myers crying at the press conference. You're going to Windhorst, who I think told you the entire landscape of the NBA has changed right then and there. I think you had a player on. I think you had Curry on that night, too. And I'm thinking to myself, how is Scott, do you have to think of every question then right on the fly? You have no time to prep. I mean, obviously you watch the game, you're taking notes, you probably know a couple of things, but in that situation, you can't prep for all of those interviews in one sort of sitting.
No. And the thing about you can't plan for it. And I'm reacting in real time to their reaction. I mean, Curry's been wonderful to us during the show. I think he's come on more than anyone in the NBA that I can think of. And we benefited, Jimmy, in that during the time that our show's been on the air, Auburn and Clemson have been great in college football, and Golden State's been great in the NBA. And so as a result, guys like Dabo and Nick Saban and Steve Kerr and Draymond and Steph Curry and Kevin Durant, whomever, they know how our show does it. In other words, they know there's a room on site where they go. They know there's a place to sit down. It's quiet. It's out of the way. They're going to put on headphones. They're going to be able to see me. They have what's called net return. And that's just a TV term for basically having a television so that there's, even though we're not face to face, there's at least the ability to sort of feel like you're having a conversation with somebody. And those teams have all been constants throughout our show being on. And so when we have these big event shows, they've been really, really gracious to come by because I think, you know, they know what they're in for. But as a host, like, I can plan to do my best to lay out a series of questions I'm interested in finding out. But when Bob Myers cries 5 minutes before I talk to Steph, and Steph, who I've talked to 100 times, is seemingly on the verge of tears after what wasn't just a win, Jimmy, but a remarkable season-saving win, I'm just honestly trying to figure out how to ask with sensitivity. Like, I get that you're bummed, but like, there's no room in your heart for some happiness over the win you guys just had. Like, it was jarring to me how crushed they were and how unable they seemed to be to even address what they'd just done, which I thought was an amazing win. But I guess that should have told me, you know, that's how upsetting it was. But it was really wild in real time.
So that let me ask you, so that show for you, and I guess all the shows after the finals, has to be some sort of adrenaline rush where you probably crash a little when it's over, or no?
I mean, yes and no. I mean, there's an adrenaline that's required. I mean, ours is the only business I can think of where you spend the entirety of your day waiting to do your job at midnight. Mm-hmm. And I've always equated it to landing a plane. Like, at 1 a.m, your attention span, your focus, your energy has to be as high as it can be for an hour. And you're performing to a degree. I mean, I'm not over the top theatrical, but you're meant to keep people entertained and paying attention. So at 1 o'clock, whether it was that show or last night's show on ESPN2, where we're just getting a little bit goofy, there's a bit of an adrenaline rush where you have to come down. You have to land the plane, as I always call it, because you're up at a certain level and it takes a while to come down from that. But I'd be lying if I said that the shows post-finals, post-college football playoff, post-Monday Night Football, where you know there's a big audience, and particularly when there are moments that are memorable, that feel significant, and you're the one that gets to talk to the people that were in the arena, so to speak, there's definitely an appreciation for it. Like, yeah. I'm just grateful that we get to do those shows. You know what I mean?
Right. Absolutely. Well, the reason I asked that question is sort of to set up the next question, because I'm such a great host. But
there you go.
There you go. So once we get through the NBA draft here, and I guess a little bit of the NBA free agency madness, we'll hit those summer doldrums where we just have sort of MLB carrying us till we get to football. And I'm curious, when you do those shows, are you still getting a rush from those shows, or are those just old hat at this point, and you get in there, you know how to do them, it's a good night, and then, you know, you go home and that's it? Or is being live on TV every night, no matter, obviously, like you said, finals, college football playoffs, there's going to be more of a rush. Regular show, is it still a rush?
Yeah, but I understand the question, and it's valid. And to say, oh no, they're all the same, would be total bullshit, but right. I wouldn't lie. Right. It's not. It's different. And there's a reason why after free agency on the 3rd of July, I tap out and I'm gone for the bulk of the summer. I have Francesa hours for the summer.
I was just going to say, that sounds very Mike Francesa-esque if you're off for the entire summer.
Well, it's not. And I do come back at some point in August just to remind people that I'm still on the payroll. But I mean, look, if you're planning a year, and you're a contracted employee and you're contracted to do X number of shows, you figure out the time that matters the most, and you figure out the time that matters the least from a viewing perspective, and you plan accordingly. That's all it is. So we don't have too many shows to get to or through after the finals and before free agency. Right. We've got the NBA draft this week, so that occupies some of it. But I mean, we do look at the space in the time where we have off nights. For instance, I had Rakim on last week on a night where there was no Stanley Cup and no NBA Finals, and I had him on because I wanted to, because I have an hour to do on television, and I'm an old school hip hop guy, and to me, he's one of the greatest of all time. And so we had Rakim on for a while. I think we occasionally do things like that are departures from sports. But I mean, if you're asking me on a night where there's the College World Series and there's a bunch of MLB games, and you're trying to replicate the sense of energy or adrenaline as, okay, Kawhi Leonard's waiting in the wings, Pascal Siakam has the flag of Cameroon on his shoulders, a bottle of champagne in his hand, and ski goggles on.
Right.
Well, he's sitting down in the chair. Well, no, it's not the same.
Right.
But you know this with sports. The day you show up and think, oh, it's just a boring Wednesday, is the day someone throws a perfect game or hits four home runs or something. I mean, sports never disappoint you.
Right.
So like, I don't ever show up and think, oh, man, this sucks. No, it's never like that.
Well,
it's just there's levels to it.
Right. Well, Saturday is the perfect example. You know, the NBA Finals end, everyone thinks they're going to enjoy a summer Saturday, and then Anthony Davis gets traded. And, you know, in sports media, in sports media, you don't.
I was at a family function, and I made the mistake of looking at my phone, and I'm like, oh my God, it happened. And then I'm like, all right, well, don't be in here on your phone. It doesn't, like, I'm not at work. I was off. So I managed to mostly ignore it, other than like, wow, that happened.
And in sports media, we don't want that happening on a Saturday. That's brutal for us on a Saturday night to have something big like that. At least, for us on the internet, we'd much rather have that, you know, during the week than on a Saturday. I don't know how you feel about it.
I get it, but you know, but sports operate on their own clock and on their own, on their own schedule. That's just, you can't. That's what I'm saying with like the night you show up and think it's going to be just a garden variety day is the night that something insane happens. So that's the beauty of what we get to cover.
So I'm just curious, on a regular day, maybe where you don't have the insanity of a game five of the NBA Finals or a game six with the celebrations, you're doing a regular sports center, NFL season or NBA season, whatever it is, or just a regular sports center. What is the sort of day like for you in terms of timing? Like when you get up, when you start working on the show, when you get to when you get to ESPN, what's the typical day like?
We meet around 5:30, which is earlier than people might presume it is.
Right.
I think people may just assume you roll in at 11 o'clock and just read what someone else wrote, but that isn't it. I mean, I write it.
Right.
We meet and talk about it at about 5:30, and I'm free during the day to do whatever. The cool thing is, as a dad late in life, is I get to pick kids up from school, and I kind of laugh. It's many times I've said this, it's, you know, 15 moms in Lululemon Under Armour yoga pants, and it's me.
Right.
And that's fine. I'm thrilled that I get to be present for those moments that a lot of dads that will be working during the day might miss. You know, do I miss stuff at night? Yeah, there's trade-offs, but you know, you're around during the day. But I do spend a lot of time, Jimmy, sitting right where I'm sitting right now talking to you, which is in my office in the house, you know, in front of a computer, because I have a show tonight, and you're just trying to make sure you have a line in the water.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is just what's out there.
Right.
You know what we're in. You're in it. I'm in it. We're in the content business. So I'm constantly trying to make sure that I'm aware of the content that might have a home in the show. I could do that all day, but I don't, because then there'd be no point or benefit in me being home. So it's kind of a casual keeping track of what's going on. I'll write one big thing typically at some point during the day, so that I've got something, that part of the show in the can for when we arrive, for the meeting. And then we, you know, do our show, and we're done at one, sometimes later, and you drive home on Route 84 at mock speed with no other human beings visible, and you know, come home and try to land the plane, and you wake up and start all over again.
You know, it's funny. You've used the expression "land the plane" twice already, and I know you're very good friends with Chris Long, who just retired. And Chris was writing weekly Game of Thrones recaps for SI.com, and I was his editor. The thing was my idea. So when Chris was writing these recaps, he would always use the phrase "land the plane" in terms of how the show was going to end and how they were going to wrap it up. So I'm wondering if there's like a Chris Long connection with the phrase "land the plane" there.
No, I mean, if so, he stole it from me,
there,
which is smart, because I'm really, really, I'm a
wordsmith,
a nimble wordsmith.
Yep.
Is what I am. Now, Long's great, as you well know. I've said forever, just to me, the analogy of landing the plane just always made sense, because your energy and your adrenaline are spiked at 1 o'clock in the morning, and you can't come home, you know, park your car in the garage, walk inside, walk upstairs and lie down. Like, that's just not, that doesn't work.
Right.
I mean, when you get home today at whatever time, like, the idea that you'd be able to go to bed immediately is laughable, and same for me. So that's just always the way I've described it.
So you mentioned one big thing, and you've had a lot of memorable one big things, especially, I feel like, recently. I just mentioned Chris Long. I thought you had a great one about Chris's retirement and the relationship you guys have developed. Steph Curry, who you mentioned earlier, actually on air gave you praise for one of your one big things. On average, how long does it take you to write those? How many do you sort of, when you wake up in the morning, have an inkling of what you want it to be, or you stare at a blank screen every day and you try to go from there?
It all depends. It's something I did on radio and has really it transitioned really nicely to TV. And I like to write, because I think it's the most important thing anybody does in this business. I don't care if you're podcast or on radio or you're on TV, your ability to take your thoughts and crunch them down to something and present it in a concise manner that reflects what you really feel, like, it, that's a challenge. It's hard, and it's, I think it's really benefits you to try to do it. So that's an exercise every day that I think is valuable. There's days when, as an example, Monday's show, I was thinking maybe do Gary Woodland, because it's like, here's this guy that won the U.S. Open. Oh, well, you know, he's only won one. Well, we'll see if he can win more. And I'm like, well, you know, you realize that Dustin Johnson and Justin Thomas and Justin Rose and, you know, Sergio Garcia and Adam Scott, you realize they have one major also. Like, just try to, you know, to me, things that benefit from context and longer than 20 seconds, but, you know, I don't want to go 4 minutes on these things. So I was going to do that, but then I thought, no, I want to do this LaMelo Ball thing, because he's going pro, and I got to kind of own up to my own kind of how I view him and through this prism of this circus that he's a part of, and that's not fair to the kid, blah, blah, blah. So that was how I landed on doing that on Monday. You know, there's many times there's one or two things that I think might be work well content I want to get in the show, and I want to be able to talk about my opinion, right? So that's how that might happen. The one about my daughter that was about her birthday that you mentioned, that Steph mentioned on air, which, by the way, was really just one of those shake your head moments. I mean, the guy had just scored 33 points in the second half of a game to eliminate Houston. And here he is on the way out thanking me for this thing I'd done about my daughter turning six. You know, that's when I started this show, Jimmy, I never dreamt that sharing personal things would be something I would do. And I certainly never imagined that it'd be something that some star athlete would be thanking you for. But that's what has really been cool about that segment. And that one about my daughter, I didn't even intend to write it, but I think writing's beneficial. So I was feeling emotional thinking about her, and I just sort of started writing it. And as I wrote it, I thought, I want to do this. And then Stanford Steve tweeted it out, and a day there were 2 million whatever views of it and this and that, and people react in a way that's really reminds me that it's not something I would care to do every day, and you shouldn't be personal like that every day. Right. But sprinkling it in occasionally, I think, has really proven to be something that connects you to people. I shared losing my dad, and that was another one that I didn't intend to do, but I just sat here and I felt like I wanted to write it down, and I did, and then I decided I'd share it on television. And those have been among the most, I guess, shared or commented on pieces I did, and they had nothing to do with sports. So I think it's been a great reminder that people, we're all just people, and we connect over shared things, love and loss, and being human beings. Sports is a great connector too, but it's also nice to be able to share how you feel about things. And so I'm glad I have. As I say, I mean, when they react that way, if you were cynical, you'd think, okay, well, now how can I write something about my 3-year-old boy today? Well, no, that isn't how it works. I'm not going to, my family shouldn't be content. I'm not going to exploit my family for content.
Right.
But when I feel something sincerely, then I'm not afraid to share that. And I do think that there's been value both for me in learning that, and hopefully for people in consuming it.
And you, I mean, most of them are about sports. So I think, like you said, that's when the ones you do that aren't about sports are more powerful. If you were out there doing that all the time, it sort of goes in one ear and out the other.
Agreed. I mean, to me, it's like the old analogy, like sugar, a sprinkle of sugar is sweet, and a teaspoon is make you want to throw up. Right. So, I mean, you have to pick your spots with these things. And I mean, I have a show about sports, so I'm looking for something every day that I feel is worthy. And, you know, if it's something off the beaten path that maybe you haven't heard every other person talk about, then great. And when we're in the middle of finals and you get sort of the first crack at, you know, I'm not a hot take guy, but if you want to know my opinion on, say, Kawhi, I'm able to, after they've won, share some thoughts on him in that the first couple of hours after it's happened. Those you're writing on the fly.
Right.
You know, 10 o'clock at night or whatever. And those are more challenging just from the editing perspective. You know, you make it more difficult for the people behind the scenes to create the video that kind of match the words, but you know, so be it. You know, they're not the same every day. And I think that's what makes the process of doing it every day enjoyable.
I have to ask you one tough question. I got a few topics here that I want to touch on, but I'm going to ask you one tough one based off of the nonsense that took place yesterday. Would you have LeVar Ball on your show?
I've made it a point not to talk about him. I don't know why I would. I don't know what the reason would be to do it, particularly because I think I understand the game.
And, well, that's
it doesn't interest me is what it really boils down to, Jimmy. And right. I've seen what he does, and you know, it doesn't interest me.
Yeah.
So I don't know what to say. Like, no, I wouldn't. Well, to talk in absolutes doesn't really benefit you, because who knows, maybe if there was a reason to, but I don't know what that reason would be. And the reason isn't going to be for me to give him a mic and let him talk about how his son's going to be the greatest that ever was, and his oldest son is, it's a mistake, and the Lakers will never win. It's like, that kind of stuff is, I think it's pretty obvious what it is.
Right.
And I've said from the start, it doesn't interest me. And since I'm in charge of my show, you know, then I'd pass on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the reasons for having him on are pretty obvious. It's so things can happen like yesterday, but I don't want you to get
I guess,
into that.
And if that's what you want to do, that that's what you want to do on your show, then go right ahead. But it doesn't interest me and for my show, so I choose not to.
God bless you. All right, let's go to something much lighter. What is this nonsense now with the ESPYs? You've never been invited to an ESPYs. One, how is that possible? Two, now that it's like a thing that you've never been invited and they still don't invite you, what is going on exactly?
I'll never go.
What if they asked you to host?
No, I'm not going. I've told them. Listen, I've told them I'm not going. You know what's funny? The first year I ever worked at ESPN, I went, but I was a guest of a guy named this is so pretentious. I went. As Tiger said, "Hey, the ESPYs are in Vegas. Do you want to go?" And I'm like, "Well, sure." He's like, "Well, come." And I used some of his tickets. I used a ticket. It was just me, and I went because it was Vegas, and. So my first year, I'm there as a guest of a guy that won like every ESPY because he was pretty good in 2000. And that was the first year I worked at ESPN, and I've never been asked by the company to go in any capacity. And Russillo, at this point, if he were on the other line, would be saying, yeah, but tell him why. Well, I would be covering the Open Championship when we had it, or I'm on vacation or whatever. And all that's true. But now... it's just fun for me to bitch about it and just make a big stink about how I've never been invited. And I think someone like from the big league tried to turn it into a thing. And I'm like, no, this is just a running joke.
Right.
And it doesn't trouble me. I'm never going. So that's my stance at the moment.
Now you just said about LeVar Ball, don't speak in absolutes, never say never. And here you're throwing down an absolute hammer that you'll never go to the ESPYs.
Well, again, that's right. That's during that time. Look, I work. I'll never pretend that, like, for all the people listening that really work hard, I don't want to act like I work hard. Our job's not hard, but it's a decent grind of days and hours doing a solo show after the, after the Masters through the NBA finals. And when we get to July, I'm going to go ahead and go to the beach with my family. And I'd much prefer that. So is it a hammer? No one cares. They don't care. I don't care.
Right.
And it's fine. I hope everyone has a great time.
Now, here's the question everyone listening to this wants me to ask you right now, but I don't think you will answer, and I don't think you should, but my God, you must have some stories about Vegas, Tiger Woods, 2000, and yourself.
My memories aren't for sale, but it was, I'll say this, it was pretty typical Vegas. There was some laughs.
Wait,
I remember there were some cards that might have been played.
Did you hang out with Tiger?
But it was, say again?
Did you hang out with Tiger?
I did.
Oh, okay.
I did.
Yeah.
And it was, listen, I have degenerate friends who have Vegas stories that are as cliched as you could dream of. The night that I was at the ESPYs and was at the after party and spent some time with Tiger was a very, very mild, and nothing happened that was, that would be like worth tweeting about. It was just a night that, it was early and it was mellow.
All right.
I'm sorry to disappoint.
Well, no, I mean,
if you want to know about the time my friends were at the Hard Rock and it was the Swingers Convention weekend, that's a story.
Sure, let's get into that. Now, were you at the Swingers Convention or was your friends at the Swingers Convention?
I was not, but it coincided in, like, with the Swingers, which,
right.
Anyway, some people met people and I don't know, things took a turn.
I think you just described every Swingers Convention right there. People met some people.
I believe so.
Yeah.
I believe I did.
Yeah.
And that things took a turn. I don't mean people took a turn, but anyway, neither here nor there.
Yeah. Well, that's Vegas for you. Speaking of Vegas,
true enough.
I miss bad beats so much. I need college football to start already. And again, we've gone through this before, but the lack of promotion for Bad Beats by ESPN irritates me. I have to like search for it every Tuesday and to put it in my column, and I do. But we need Bad Beats back in the worst way. This whole gambling thing, I feel like it's not taken off like people expected. I think people like you and I, we've talked about this, who have been known to place a wager over the years, I think we sort of expected, like, you know, if you haven't been wagering, you're not going to really start now because it's legal in a bunch of states. But I think a lot of media companies, well, all of them, ESPN, SI, I'm not singling anyone out, thought this was going to be this big boon. And I don't think it's happened yet. And I don't know if it will. I know a lot of people do. What's your take on that as someone who likes to place a wager now and again?
Well, what I've always said about this is that, and I said it then, at the time, that all this does is make it less taboo, and you see every network is trying to do, you know, capitalize in some form or fashion. But my feeling was this: it was the same as marijuana. Like if you live in a state where it suddenly becomes legal, and in your whole life you've never been high, the idea that you're going to wake up on like a Wednesday morning and go, "Hey, I'm going to run down to the head shop and get, you know, buy." You wouldn't even know the terminology, but like, hey, let's rip bong hits because it's legal. Well, no, if you wanted to get high, you've got a guy, right. You've got to connect somewhere, and he can get you a nickel bag or a dime bag or whatever weight you need to get where you need to be. And if you want to gamble, as you and I both know, you've got outs somewhere. And the fact that it's legal, like, you don't even need those outs.
Right.
It's just less taboo. It just means people like you and me can talk about it more. But I don't talk about it more than I did when we started, just because, and we've covered this ground. Like, I just looked at gambling and I was going to be honest about it because I knew people did it. And it just felt like any kind of icky connotation was just, I just felt it was silly. Yeah. And clearly that's where we are now. You know, you see, like, the teams are going to put like gambling kiosks in their stadiums,
right,
and set up book if they can. But I never believed that this was going to create a new generation or race of gamblers. They already exist. All
right.
This does is makes all of us. We don't have to feel like we're, you know, in the back room of the party, like we're the lepers. Now it's, you know, out and on the main stage on every network. So, I mean, you know, we got Ravel tweeting about it. So that's good times.
I think Darren's probably a little, you know, it's funny. I saw a tweet from him this morning, as a matter of fact, about how New York is not going to have the mobile gambling until 2020. I'm just like, you really don't need that. Hate to burst your bubble, but fivedimes.com will take care of everything you need, you know.
Yeah, this is the minutiae of gambling. But like at some point, as it becomes legal, then what becomes interesting is how do the authorities concern themselves with those people who are not being taxed for all this? This whole point is you know, so that you can be taxed the way marijuana's been taxed and creates all this revenue. Well, you know, all of a sudden, if your buddy's running something out of the back of a pizza shop, then the feds get involved. And like, hey, we want our taste. I mean, this is how it works. Am I right?
The one angle I'm fascinated by, and again, it's because I'm in sports media and I sort of have this daily column, but the NFL in all this is what I'm fascinated by, because none of the networks will go on record as to admitting it. They all give you a different story. But I know that Goodell has told them not to have spreads and betting mentioned during the games. And it's interesting to me, though, because they're going to get involved in it somehow, some way, but they still don't want it discussed during the games, which, you know, we both know Al knows how to do it in the backhanded way. But to act like, you know, a spread is 7, a team is up by 13, they're on the 1 yard line, there's 30 seconds left, are they going to take a knee? And an announcer can't address that is absurd to me. But, you know, Goodell doesn't want that. So
we agree.
Yeah.
So we completely agree about that. And that's why I have chosen to be honest about it, because we all understand what it is. So there's no need to be, in my opinion, to talk about it in this veiled way. What will be really interesting, and it's already happening, by the time they're in Las Vegas with the Raiders, they will have let these other leagues be their lead blockers,
right,
and kind of create the space where it's like, okay, well, what have you guys done? All right, you sold. I mean, they already have partnerships for information and things of that nature, which is interesting.
Right.
And and I don't know, remember if you and I have talked about this or not, but like the leagues kind of want their cut from Vegas or whatever for integrity fees and all. Like, I just don't see it happening. Yeah. I just don't. But if that did happen, nobody would benefit more from a dollars and cents perspective of that than the NFL.
Of course.
They said, look, we want X percent of what is wagered on your handle on us. They'd benefit massively. And then if the other leagues have kind of already created this wave of acceptance, then they can just tiptoe on in and say, don't mind if I do. And here we are. Oh, what a cool deal you guys are part of over here. Yeah, that stuff before in the past, it was silly. Yeah, we're everything's great. Yeah. Everyone should bet. Come to Vegas. I assume that's where we'll get eventually. It's just they'll let others do, as I keep using that term, kind of the heavy lifting, the blocking, whatever you want to call it. They're just going to let other leagues be at the fore.
Yeah. Again, I don't expect, you know, Jim Nance and Joe Buck and to talk for 3.5 straight hours about the line. But when the line, the over under is on the line, no pun intended, a comment about it would be nice. That's all. But I am not holding my breath.
I agree.
That. Yeah,
we agree. I mean, but you know, we're all in the same place with this. I think everyone just sort of eye rolls like this insistence upon ignoring what is plainly obvious. To me, just things that are like, it's an affront to intelligence. And that's my biggest thing in anything that goes on now, Jimmy, is when it's just, when things are obvious, we're adults. Let's just be adults about it. And talking about it as if it isn't real, it's like a guy with a comb over. Like, you're bald.
Right.
It's all right.
Right.
Like, no one thinks you're not bald.
Right.
So doing that thing you do, like, and you leave the house and you're like, yeah, man, I have got quite a head of hair. No, you don't. You're bald. So just be bald. Like, it's and never has it been easier to be bald, and never has it been easier to say gambling's okay than right now. So I don't know how we got where we got with that analogy, but I think it made sense.
I don't know, but when this is over, I'm going to go on YouTube and look up the Seinfeld scene when George wears a toupee and Elaine gets pissed off, and he's talking about how much he loves it, and she says, you're bald. And he goes, I was bald. Such a great scene. We mentioned Al. Go ahead.
You just be bald. It's all right.
Yeah. I want to get to that, but I'm going to wrap up in 1 minute. But this is one thing I don't know about you. Are you a Stern fan? Howard Stern?
I'd imagine brilliant.
You can't listen now because you're
really
sleeping.
Brilliant. I was just reading the Rolling Stone interview with him,
right.
And he fascinates me as
broadcaster,
just as a conversationalist. Mm-hmm. As he's so good at talking to people in ways that it's disarming, and creating great conversations that I really, really admire. I was in DC when he was in DC 101 back in the day,
right?
So like the at some point. For me, the shtick and the nonsense and, you know, Beetlejuice and all the rest of the, you know, tossing midgets and things of that nature. I mean, I was like, I just always thought that what he is now was what he always could have been. And it felt like he was just playing to the lowest common denominator. Is that fair?
Yes, that's fair. The reason I asked, well, I also think, listen, people evolve and change over time, and I think that's
of course, but yeah. And I admire that is what I'm saying. I admire that you reach a place where you kind of, and it's interesting. He's talking about therapy and finding, you know, the journey is not over, yada, yada, but we're all allowed to grow up or grow out of things or whatever. Yeah. And I don't begrudge the guy. You know, like, he made a fortune off of that. And he has fans, by the way, that are pissed off that he's not that anymore.
Well, that's
like,
right.
He's very open about that.
Right.
Like, he's got his core fans are mad that he evolved. But
exactly.
I admire, obviously, the business acumen, but what I admire more than anything else is just his talent as a talker. I think he's got very few peers in that regard.
Yeah, the reason I asked you is because Monday was the 25th anniversary of the famous prank call to Peter Jennings during the O.J. car chase when Al Michaels came in, lest anyone thinks that's a real call. It was totally farcical. And I know you did radio for a long time, and I'm just wondering if you have a worst prank call, funniest prank call story. I mean, on radio, you could dump it pretty quick. And the OJ Peter Jennings thing was special because Peter Jennings had no idea he was being pranked.
We didn't take callers to speak of, just because I was always afraid that, you know, handing the mic to somebody is the dangerous thing, because you have no idea if they're smart enough to have it in their hand.
Right.
And if they're, it's like giving the wheel to somebody and they could just drive you right off the road. So we rarely did it.
Yeah.
But speaking of Stern, Baba Booey, Jenks?
Yeah, Captain Jenks. Yeah.
Yeah, he made it on SportsCenter one night. It was one of these things where it was Bryant Westbrook, supposedly.
Oh, that's right.
Like,
yeah.
No, he has to be on live with us.
Right.
And I remember asking our coordinating producer, why do we care to talk to Bryant Westbrook live? It was some free agency deal, but I thought, okay, well, he's a fine player, but like, we don't like breaking news, like live with Bryant. Like, it just made no sense.
Right.
And then it turned out it wasn't him at all. And in the first 3 seconds of the guy talking, I'm like, oh, this isn't him. And I have no way of kind of communicating that. You know, what's funny is if it was now on my show, like on my show, I just would have said, all right, stop talking, pull the plug. It's not him.
Right.
But this is still, it was two anchor Sports Center. Mm-hmm. It was me and Levy. I was like, I wasn't confident enough to just shut the guy down at the time. And we got, you know, Captain Jankst. And what was priceless about this is I got a phone call at my ESPN voicemail from the guy saying, hey, you know, I heard from the Stern guys that you're a really good dude. And I'm sorry. Like, I hope you're not bummed out, but like, don't feel bad. This and that. And I remember thinking, don't feel bad. Like, you're a crank caller. I'm good.
Right.
You know, it's okay. What happened. And I just said at the time when it happened, I'm like, well, this is going to be on YouTube. And that wasn't supposed to happen.
Right.
But it happened to me. And it was, you know, and I think they put it on Stern, you know, whatever, a day or so later, because that's what, you know, they do with those things. But that happened to me.
I had forgotten about that one, because in my head, when I think of the pranks to ESPN, I think of the Steve Bartman one with Dan Patrick. I forgot the Westbrook one with you.
I got. But yeah. I mean, it's always funny how people are like, oh, Van Pelt, like, how could you not this and that? Like, do you understand I had zero role in anything? Like, I didn't vet the guy. I didn't search this out. I wasn't the one that put him on the air.
Right.
I just said hello and quickly realized it wasn't him. And I'm in no position to do anything to fix it other than just sort of, you know, take it, which is what we did.
Last one, and you, mm-hmm. you mentioned, we talked about being bald a couple of minutes ago. How did this whole thing start with the people sending the pictures of people who look like Scott Van Pelt?
It just started the same way anything does. Like on Twitter, people would send, because like, you know what's funny? And it's actually kind of sad. Like as I walk through the world now in airports or where I was at Disney with my daughter in the spring. And like, I just, there's bald. Cause as I said, and it's true, it's never been easier to be bald. And I'd like to think that I took that chunky rectangular glasses, bald guy look and made it really work for me. And you see it everywhere.
Yeah.
Not that people are trying to look like me, but I mean, it's sort of like, you know, you used to have the terrible Ben Franklin hair and like bad glasses, but now you can get kind of cool guy glasses and shave your head and it's as presentable as you can make yourself.
Right.
And I see people everywhere that are sort of bald white guys with glasses. And somewhere along the way, someone started sending them to me on Twitter.
Okay.
And then one night I was bored and I just went through and started retweeting a bunch of them. And everyone was just, you know, laughing at like, Jesus, look at these. It's like the Matrix. There's a zillion of you everywhere. And then I thought with the show, we'll occasionally do it. And the thing that's crazy, Jimmy, is it never stops.
Like,
As I sit here right now, I open up Twitter and here's a picture of me. It doesn't look anything like me. It doesn't matter. It's a bald white guy with glasses.
Right.
And this is some guy at the Golden Jacket Lounge there at the Hall of Fame. And he bears as much resemblance to me as you do.
Right.
But it's a bald white guy with glasses.
I think
and
I sent
all
you
day,
one once.
Every day.
Yeah.
I get them. And then the ones that look close enough, I'll put a little like on. And then we go through and from time to time, well, you know, it's content, right?
Absolutely.
Here's these poor eats who look like me.
Listen, I didn't know if there was a back. I didn't know if it was something from like your radio days or maybe a Barstool thing, because I know you're tight with those guys. I didn't know how the ball got rolling on that, but I see now you brought it upon yourself by retweeting all these crazy people that see you.
Yeah, I think it happened during, like, we were on radio and, you know, we were still on radio, so there was no place for me to put it on TV. Like, there was no home for it in a television place.
Yeah.
And then like one big thing or like bad beats or whatever, like something that was content there. All right, if you're going to give me an hour, well, we'll just make it content. So, and again, to me, that's sort of like sugar. I mean, you gotta be I think people get a kick out of it, but at the same time, I always keep waiting for the shelf life of the joke to run out.
Yeah. And
because there never seems to be an end of it, it does continue, but at some point, I assume we'll be done with it.
It's amusing to me when...
Although they're just... I keep showing up in, like, Lederhosen or, like, playing the banjo in Norway. It makes me laugh many of them seem to show up.
It's still going strong because, I mean, I pride myself on not being faked out by things on the internet because I've been doing this for so long, but whenever I'll see a retweet of yours into my feed and it's like, oh, here's Scott Van Pelt, you know, playing the banjo, I'm like, what the hell is Scott doing? And I'll click on it and I will get fooled into thinking it's you for a moment. So it's still working.
Every now and then they're actually like, there was a guy that fell over at the Reds game last week.
It was a pretty
good one, but then you know, the dude, I don't know, there were some jean shorts involved, and I like to think my athleticism is still such that I wouldn't go, you know, head over heel over the seats, but you never know. I mean, it's been a while since I've been, you know, had to field a grounder, so
anyone can trip. Anyone can take a step.
True.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it. Enjoy your Mike Francesa's summer. And let's get...
Kings do king things, right? Yeah. I mean, I'm not kingly, but I mean, we'll take some time. I'd like to think we've earned it. Then football starts, and we'll be back doing our things. And by the way, we did do Bad Beats last night that featured Women's World Cup, terrible beat on the over, and some baseball bad beats. But I'm with you. I think the football ones do feel ones that people kind of wait around for the most.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you can get a good baseball one in there. There's no doubt. I've seen some crazy baseball, you know, over-under stuff happening. But there's nothing like the one last year, refreshment, it was in the snow. Was it Wyoming Air Force? That's the greatest one of all time, possibly. You have the
one?
Was it Wyoming Air Force in the snow where the coach declined a penalty?
Yes, that happened.
Yeah.
That did happen.
That was the best one last year.
You know what, though? There was an over in the MAC game that we made our bad beat of the year. Just because it was in Dwight L. Perry Stadium, and there must have been like 11 people in the stands at the end, and it was a Hail Mary from a third-string quarterback.
Right.
But, I mean, you know what the beauty of bad beats is it's like ice cream. You know, 31 flavors some. Wyoming Air Force, if that's the one you think's the worst, then it is the worst. You know, I mean, we can argue about the relative hideousness of them, but they're all just unjust and should never have happened. But some poor fool, you know, had Air Force, and there they are, losing.
The coaches there declining holding penalties was phenomenal.
That
was a good one. All right, enjoy the summer, like I said, and good job with the NBA Finals. I appreciate you coming on, Scott.
No, listen, I appreciate the time to visit, and we'll do it again sometime soon. All right, be well. Enjoy summer.
You too. Thanks. All right, my thanks to Scott Van Pelt for coming on. Always love talking to Scott. I think this is his third time on the podcast, so I appreciate it. Please, if you are not a subscriber, hit that subscribe button. It helps a lot. And if you enjoyed hearing Scott, rate and review the podcast. Very easy to rate it. You just tap the stars, so hit the 5 stars. If you want to write a review, that would be beautiful. Appreciate it all. I'll see you next week right here on the SI Media Podcast. Take care.